because the subject that I've chosen for today, I figured I'd pick one of the most rarest books that is almost never talked about in sermons. And so I chose one of the Old Testament prophets, specifically the prophet Habakkuk, or Habakkuk. And interestingly, in Adrian's Bible study this week, he's covering the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. And one of the places where Hebrews 11 quotes from is in the book of Habakkuk. And so Adrian happened to do a fairly significant spiel on this subject. And so if you've ever wondered if if speakers get nervous about, is someone going to steal my subject? He was going line by line right through some of the stuff that I was going to cover, and I'm thinking, boy, do I need to switch subjects. And interestingly, he even used this particular map that I that I put on my handout. And so I was thinking it'll be an excellent review for people if they get a chance to have seen Adrian's message first. Otherwise, it's something for you to look forward to. If you want to hear something about the faith chapter, you could check out the Hebrews 11 coverage that Adrian does this week in his Wednesday Bible study. So to begin with the handout, it talks about a little bit about this prophet. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, when you've been in the church for years and years, and there's only, 66 books of the Bible, but it's interesting how some of these books still remain a mystery. Like, you know, what's the subject of Habakkuk? And again, by the end of today, I hope that we're all experts on that. But it's one of those interesting things where there's really not that many books and there's not that many people, but over the years, sometimes we just don't get a chance to, we sometimes just don't get a chance to bring that stuff to memory the way that we would like it to be able, so that we could just recall it like that. And maybe God is merciful to us, and sometimes we have poor memory, so that we can go over and over material, and it's just like it's new, and it's exciting each time. So to begin by covering some of the material in the front page here, it says that Habakkuk was a prophet who prophesied between 612 B.C. and 589 B.C., in the year 612 B.C., Nineveh fell. So we remember from the book of Jonah, Jonah was sent to Nineveh, and in that book, Nineveh repented. They didn't. They didn't get punished by God at that time. But eventually, they went back to their old ways, and Nineveh ended up falling. And according to this, it was in 612 B.C. that Nineveh fell. In 589 B.C., Judah was invaded, and Assyria was in disarray. Habakkuk prophesied between these two dates. So again, this would have been after Israel fell to Assyria years before, but before Babylon takes over. Habakkuk was a musical prophet, and he played the stringed instruments, the harp and the lyre. And we have pictures of what those stringed instruments looked like. So some prophets walked around and they told scary messages. Apparently, Habakkuk, when he went around, he had musical instruments and used music to help get his message across. His name means he that embraces, a wrestler. So embrace is the meaning of his name. And it's kind of interesting because in the book, what we're going to find is that he's a little different from some of the other prophets. What he does is he asks God questions. And it's a little bit like Job, where Job was saying, oh, I wish God were here and he could, you know, explain why he's, you know, what's going on with some of this stuff. And interestingly, with some prophets, it's a case of, thus saith the Lord, boom, 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 and they just relay a message. In the case of Habakkuk, he's asking God questions and expecting to get some answers. So it's kind of interesting, very similar to kind of the relationship that King David had, where he would ask God questions and work things out talking to God. It says, the book of Habakkuk was written to Judah and all God's people to stress that God is still in control. And it's an important message that we need today. So I came up with three sets of questions here that I thought were interesting. First one is, why does God have these three chapters? It's a little book in the Bible. So again, by the end of today, hopefully we'll have an understanding of why does God even bother to have this book there? Maybe we could go to 65 books in the Bible and not have this one. Each book has its purpose, and we'll try to understand that today. Another question, what does God like about this prophet and their interaction? So again, I've already hinted, this guy's a little different because he's going to be questioning God. He's going to lay out questions, and then he's going to wait for answers. And third, how does the theme and messages of Habakkuk resonate in today's world? Is this a book about way back then and there? Or is there parts of this book that apply to our time now? So we're going to cover that as we go through the chapters today. So again, it's just three chapters long. The bottom of the page lists a summary of what each chapter covers. So that's one example of a summary is here. The one thing I'll point out in the map that's here is it kind of shows the Persian Gulf in the corner here. And it shows the Chaldeans are just at the top of the Persian Gulf. And interestingly, if you remember in the book of Daniel, Daniel talks about these four world-ruling empires. And it starts out with the Assyrian Empire, and it shows Assyria is up in this part of the map. And then the Babylonian Empire, and again, the Chaldeans are actually part of the area of Babylon. And they're a group of people that moved into that area, and they were, interestingly, kind of opportunists. If Babylon went off to war, then they would attack Babylon at that time and try to take over. And it happened a couple of times in history where they did that. And then Babylon comes back for more and takes control back again. So the term of the Chaldeans and the Assyria, or the Babylonians, are fairly interchangeable. And eventually the Chaldeans just got absorbed into Babylon. But we have, of these four world-ruling empires, we have the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and then on this side of the map is Media and Persia. And again, the third world-ruling empire, Alexander the Great, was part of the Medo-Persian Empire. And so the last one, being the Roman Empire, is not shown on this map. But interestingly, three of the four world-ruling empires is shown here on this map. And of interest to this book is the area just above the Persian Gulf where the Chaldeans resided. So if we turn the page, we'll see that the three chapters are covered on three separate pages here. And interestingly, if you have a look at the last page, we have, once again, one of these illustrations that try to show, here's what's covered in the book of Habakkuk so that you have a bit of a visual. And the purpose for this is, as we learn, sometimes it's good to hear it. Sometimes it's good to read it. Sometimes a visual like this, a picture is like 1,000 words, and so it helps people to memorize or to understand what are those components that are in the book of Habakkuk so that a few weeks from now, when someone asks you about the book of Habakkuk, you'll instantly remember. I remember that book. It talks about, this guy who kept asking God questions, and God gave him some answers. So chapter 1 starts off talking about the burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. And it starts out with what Bible commentators, some of the titles there are from Bible commentators, and they say Habakkuk's complaint. So he's going to start talking to God here. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Even cry out to you, violence, and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore, the law is powerless, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, perverse judgment proceeds. And so what Habakkuk is talking about at that time was a world where there was iniquity, lawlessness was going on. And you know, how much of that applies to our world today, where we look around and there's lawlessness, where people, you know, we like to think of North America as being an area where it's based on the rule of law, where we have laws and procedures to make sure that people follow those laws. If we need to change the laws, we can do that. But the laws are there and they're going to be enforced. And we look around and we see very often those laws are not enforced. And how unfair it is, how unfair and how upsetting it is when we see that people are getting away with not following the rules. And that's what he's complaining to God about here. He's saying, why do you show me iniquity, lawlessness, and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. Is there violence that's happening in North America today? Well, the answer is definitely yes. There's violence all around the world, and there's violence, you know, even in our country. And we see politically so much violence that's happening because different political groups are energized and they're fighting for what they believe to be correct. And some are using methods that we hope that would not be used in a democracy. You know, ideally we want truth to be out there and have, you know, discussion of ideas, and the best ideas will come to the top so that the society is benefited by the best. That doesn't happen in a world where it's violence and plundering and strife and contention. And he's saying the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. So Habakkuk is a prophet who's complaining to God, you know, why is the world like it is? And it reminds me, we spoke a few weeks ago on this about the prophet Amos. And Amos was one of those prophets also who sighed and cried. And Ezekiel was another one of God's prophets who sighed and cried because of all the things that are done. In Amos 7, it says, 7 verse 1, it says, thus the Lord showed me, behold, he formed locust swarms at the beginning of the late crop. Indeed, it was the late crop after the king's mowings. And so it was that when they had finished eating the grass of the land, that I said, O Lord God, forgive, I pray. O that Jacob may stand, for he is small. So this is one of those visions that Amos had where he cried out to God saying, you know, please spare Israel from, in this case, you know, this plague of locusts that was going to eat up all the food. Ezekiel 9:4 says, and the Eternal said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. So one of the roles of God's prophets was to sigh and cry, and one of the role of God's church members today is for us also to bring this up before God, to sigh and cry for the evil that's done out in society. When we turn on the TV today, we see similar things, a violent world. The righteous are a minority today, a tiny minority that's ignored mostly. And there's so many unjust judgments. It reminds me of the message in the book of Job, where Job was bringing some of these things up to God, questioning God. And eventually, at the end of the book of Job, God speaks up and answers Job. In the book of Isaiah, in the first chapter, Isaiah is beseeching God. And the answer back says, is where God is saying, come and let us reason together. So as a prophet, Isaiah was bringing out that God is eager to deal with his people. Whether you're a sinner or a saint, God says, come and let us reason together. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as wool. And so the idea of not being afraid of God and having a relationship with God, and sometimes that means asking some tough questions, and God is ready for it. He has broad shoulders. Be respectful, and God will answer. So the next chapter title, it's again only verse 5 in chapter 1, but the next subsection is called the Lord's Answer. So Habakkuk is saying, how come there's all this evil and you're not, you know, the law is powerless? And God says, look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe though you were told. So God is telling Habakkuk, I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind. I'm going to tell you something you're not even going to believe it. It's so incredible. And verse 6, for indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. So God's saying to Habakkuk, who's representing Judah, I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans. I'm going to raise up this enemy nation of Israel, this enemy, to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle and hasten to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes, and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. So what's the answer? Habakkuk looks out. He sees all this evil that's happening in Judah. And God says, okay, I'm going to show you something that's going to blow your mind. I'm going to bring this evil nation, and it's going to come and it's going to destroy. It comes with violence, and you know, the cavalry is powerful. They're more fierce than wolves. I'm going to bring this nation. One of the words there that I thought was interesting is the reference to the east wind. I'm not sure if many people have encountered this, but the east wind is talked about 17 times in Scripture. In the King James Bible, the east wind is talked about 17 times. In chapter 41 of Genesis, Pharaoh's dream is interpreted by Joseph. He describes 7 years of grain blasted by the east wind. In Exodus 10 and 14, the east wind is summoned by Moses to bring locust plagues and plagues to Egypt and to part the Red Sea as well so that the children of Israel could escape. So there's, again, a total of 17 references to the east wind in Scripture. One of them is here. And historically, when it's talking about the east wind, it's talking either about God's judgment or something bad happening. And so when he's talking about Assyria in verse 9 here, they all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. So again, this is another proclamation of bad news coming to Israel. So again, it talks about God choosing his punishment is overall what God is answering here, saying, is Judah bad? Well, here comes some punishment for Judah. So that brings on what's called here Habakkuk's second complaint. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. You have appointed them for judgment. O Rock, you've marked them for correction. So he's saying, hold on, God. You're not going to destroy us, are you? You're righteous. Why would you be dealing with, you know, this evil group that's worse than us? He goes on. You're of purer eyes than to behold evil. Like, God, you're pure. Why would you be looking at, you know, what evil Chaldeans are doing? And you cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously? And hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person that's more righteous than he. So again, he's saying to God, you know, would a fair God, would a just God bring even more wicked people here to destroy Judah? Why would you bring someone that's even more wicked? And again, this goes back to what God was saying is, I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind and you're not going to believe it. And Habakkuk doesn't believe it. He's, God, you're not going to destroy Judah with the Chaldeans, are you? In verse 14, why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net. They gather them in their dragnet. Therefore, they rejoice and are glad. Therefore, they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet because them, their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? So again, he's making this case. You know, are you really going to bring in the Chaldeans to do this thing? And in chapter 2, verse 1, he says, I will stand my watch, set myself on the rampart, and watch to see what he will say to me, and what answer when I am corrected. So again, the question that I ask here, why does righteous God allow the good to suffer? So this is what Habakkuk is getting to. He's saying, you know, there's good people in Judah. There's a lot of evil as well. And you're going to bring this even more wicked nation to come and destroy us? Why would you do it that way, God? And again, at the bottom of the page, there's a couple of images that are available out on the internet that show show some of the themes in Habakkuk that people deal with. So we've started off in chapter 2. And just before I go on, there's a reference in Isaiah that deals with this concept of God using a wicked nation to punish his chosen people. In Isaiah 10 is where this reference comes from. And Isaiah says in chapter 10, verse 5, he says, woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I will send them against an ungodly nation. So Isaiah is talking about when Assyria is going to be sent against Israel. And against the people of my wrath, I will give him charge. So what power was Assyria given? To seize the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like mire of the streets. And so here's this other interesting example of where God uses an evil pagan nation to punish his people. There's an interesting verse, Isaiah 10, verse 7, where it says this. It says, yet he does not mean so, nor does his heart think so, but it's in his heart to destroy and to cut off not a few nations. Now, there's two ways that the Bible scholars look at that. On one side, there are some that are saying God is using Assyria as his weapon, and one side is saying they don't think that God is using them as a weapon. It's just in their nature to be evil, and that's what happens. The other side looks at that where he says, yet he does not mean so, nor does his heart think so, where it's like the Assyrian people that are being used as this weapon, it's not necessarily, you know, they don't think that they're bad or that they're evil, but it says, but it's in his heart to destroy and to cut off not a few nations. And so very often Assyria is painted as an evil nation, And again, it's unclear here if that's because, you know, it's just in their nature to be evil and they don't even know it, or if it's something that is just a tool that God is using them as an evil nation, and there will be a change that happens in the future. So that's another example. So another prophet, Isaiah, used that example. Jim?
Which would you choose? I would think we'd believe that God uses Assyria to his own end.
Definitely. And it's a case that Assyria doesn't think that God's doing it, but they are. He is. God is in control. And again, the same fate happens in Isaiah 10 as what is going to happen here in the book of Habakkuk. In verse 12 it says, "Therefore it shall come to pass when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and Jerusalem, he will say, 'I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his haughty looks. For he says, by my strength, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am so prudent. Also, I have removed the boundaries of the people and have robbed their treasures. So I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man.'" So again, when God chooses these evil nations, in the case of Assyria here, what undid Assyria is they start thinking, "Oh, I did this because I'm in a great nation and I can do whatever I want because I'm powerful," instead of giving God credit for what happened. In the book of Habakkuk, we notice that at the end of chapter 1, or I guess it's verse 11. So God is describing the Chaldeans coming in as this big, powerful nation, but then he says in verse 11, "Then his mind changes and he transgresses." So this powerful nation changes. He commits offense ascribing this power to his God. So again, when the Chaldeans are coming in and being powerful, it's not because, you know, the Chaldean gods are so great. God is the great one. But when the pagan nations start to misascribe why they have this power over Israel, God ends up having to deal then with those evil nations. So at the top of the next page, we'll continue with chapter 2. The title here is "The Righteous Shall Live by His Faith." So we understand now why Adrian was using this when he is talking about the faith chapter, because there's some important verses that are contained in Habakkuk that Paul quotes when he's doing the faith chapter. In chapter 2, verse 2, it says, "Then the Eternal answered me and said, 'Write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it.'" So again, this prediction that God had that he's going to punish Israel with the Chaldeans, write it on tablets. And then interestingly, he says this, "For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though he tarries, wait for it, because it surely will come, and I will not tarry." So what Habakkuk was describing, he knew the Chaldeans, he knew how evil they were, and the Chaldeans ultimately did overrun Judah. And the Babylonians took Judah into captivity. So that part of the prophecy happened then and there. But this part of the prophecy, God's instructing him, write this stuff down, because it's going to happen in an appointed time yet, and at the end it will speak. So again, that type of terminology is often referencing end time prophecy. And again, when Adrian happened to be covering this subject on Wednesday night in his Bible study, he was showing examples of what kinds of things. So on the map where it showed at the top of the Persian Gulf where the Chaldeans were, well, that's where modern-day Iraq is. And some of the graphics he was showing in the background of the violence and the evil that has come out of that area that's plaguing the world right now, is a lot of the Muslim Islamic violence that's happening in the world right now. And so when we read about this plague of evil that's happening and affecting God's people, we can look at what's happening in the world today. And so the words of Habakkuk apply also to today. The appointed time, at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, so it takes a bit of time, wait for it, because it will surely come, and I will not tarry. He goes on and says, behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. And that was the verse that Paul quotes in Hebrews 10. And there's actually three different spots where that's used. And I list those three verses just a couple of sentences below. So I'll get to those when we read them. So 2:4 says, the just shall live by his faith. And in verse 5 it says, indeed, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man and does not stay at home. Because he enlarges his desire as hell, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied, he gathers to himself all nations and heaps up for himself all peoples. So it's talking about this Babylonian power, the Chaldeans, the Islamists of today that are going on, and they're trying to, they're just not satisfied. They gather all nations, and we see how, the Islamic views have spread over so much of the world. And he's heaping up peoples for himself, he's heaping up wealth for himself. So just to back up a second, we have this interesting verse saying when all this evil is happening, when an evil nation is coming and punishing us, and all this injustice is happening, where the law is not being upheld, there's iniquity, lawlessness out there, when all this is happening to us, what's God saying as a word of comfort? He's saying, the just shall live by his faith. And there's three other spots in the New Testament where they quote Habakkuk in his words. And those three verses are listed here. The first one is in Hebrews 10:36, where it says, for you have need of endurance, so that after you've done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. So again, we were just reading above where it says, this quote in Habakkuk, wait for it, because it's going to come. And Paul in verse 37, for yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So the idea of the just living by faith, what that's saying is that even though all this evil is happening around us, we have faith that God is the one ultimately in control, and God has said he'll deal with those evil nations in his time. The key for us is to make sure that we continue along and continue to look to God, because God ultimately is in control, and there's more verses that are going to be talking about that coming up. In Romans 1:17, here's another example where Paul talks about this verse, where he quotes Habakkuk. Romans 1:17, For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. So the righteousness of God is revealed through that statement. And then in Galatians 3, it says, verse 11, but that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. And again, we have that example of Abraham, where Abraham believed God, and that was accounted as righteousness to him. His faith in God, his belief, was accounted righteousness. So this idea of our need to have faith is key. And again, If you turn over and look at the bottom of page number, the bottom of the next page, the end of chapter 3, there's a list of some of the major themes in Habakkuk, and one of them is the subject, what is faith? And again, we'll be coming more to that, because this idea of faith, having faith in God, when all this evil is happening, when all the destruction, when an enemy has come into your nation and is destroying, that's when the just need to have faith that God is in control. So to continue, the next section title is called Woe to the Chaldeans. Verse 6, it says, will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his. How long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges. Will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you? And you will become their booty because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of their people shall plunder you because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and all of those who dwell in it. So I guess to paraphrase it, in modern terms, that what goes around comes around. Chaldeans, Babylonians, if you're evil to lots of nations, then there's lots of nations that are going to be your enemy. And when they get the chance, they're going to take their revenge. And interestingly, if you see the larger print, there are five woes. So again, Habakkuk early on was saying, how, God, can you use this evil nation to punish Israel? Because they're even more evil than us. God's answer is the Chaldeans are also going to be punished. Nobody gets away with being evil. God is very much aware of what's going on and is in control. In chapter 2, verse 9, it says, woe to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. You give shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many peoples, and sin against your soul. For the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the timbers will answer it. So again, here this symbolic language is being used here that evildoers that are eager to get stuff for themselves, for their household, are not going to succeed. So coveting evil gain, coveting is against one of the Ten Commandments. When you covet, you're seeking something that belongs to someone else and you want to take it. And that's what the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, are doing. And God is declaring that they'll be punished for that. And it's interesting when it says a stone will cry out from the wall. So the household that you have that is aware of all this evil that you've done, the stone is going to cry out and the timbers are going to answer back to the stone. So again, everyone is going to know about it. That's just symbolic language for saying, Chaldeans, Babylonians, you didn't fool anybody. We all know how evil what you've done while you've been oppressing and killing and taking, thinking that you're a great nation, that you're a great people, you can do what you want. But that's not God's way. Verse 12, woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not the Lord of hosts that the people labor to feed the fire, the nations weary themselves in vain? And again, here's one of the verses that's often read at the Feast of Tabernacles, where it says, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord, the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. So in the middle of condemning the Chaldeans for bloodshed, there's this little message of hope that God inserts there that says, and it, again, it's all about contrast. Here's the evilness of the Chaldeans, but there's going to be a time in the future when the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the eternal as the waters cover the sea. And we all look forward to that time. But the woes are not finished. The Chaldeans, there's still more to be proclaimed. Verse 15. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him your bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you, and utter shame upon your glory. For the violence done to Lebanon will cover you, the plunder of beasts which made them afraid, because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and all who dwell in it. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it, the mold image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of the mold should trust in it to make mute idols? So again, the condemnation there is against idolatry that's happening in the Babylon, in the Chaldeans. But it's also condemning, you know, the practice of kind of using substances to intoxicate other people so you can take advantage of that. Interestingly, in the last week or two, we have the instance of Bill Cosby, perhaps one of the most loved, beloved people in America, father symbol, who has been convicted for, plying women with drugs to get them intoxicated, so that he could have his way with them. And again, the justice eventually has caught up with him, and he's going to be sentenced. I don't know if that's happened yet, but I did see that story was in the news in the last week or two, and it fits exactly with what Habakkuk is talking about, where people, and again, there's classes of medication called date rape drugs, because people can use them to try to intoxicate their date so that they can have their way with them. And again, that's referenced in the woe. That's chapter 2, verse 15. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing the bottle to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. Exact kind of the stuff that was happening back then is happening in our society as well. Problem with our society is that the drugs are even more powerful, and they can be used in ways that people are not aware of what's going on. You spike someone's drink, they don't know that this is happening. Finally, in chapter 2, verse 19, the last of the woes against the Chaldeans. So we've heard four woes so far. What's the fifth woe? It says, woe to him who says to wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all. There's no life in these idols that are being set up in Babylon. And then in verse 20 it says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And again, that powerful scripture, again, has been used often, and even in our times, to try to comfort people to say, God is in control of what's happening. The Eternal is in his holy temple. He knows what's going on. And if we go back to that other key verse that we were talking about a few minutes ago, the idea that the just will live by faith. The just will live by faith, knowing that God is on his throne. God is in control. And it's a major theme that Habakkuk is talking about. And again, interestingly, Habakkuk might be quoting one of the Psalms here. Psalm 11:4, at the bottom of the page, it shows, Psalm 11:4 says, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. So again, a powerful statement that God is in control of what's going on. So just to summarize in the first two chapters here, we see that the first chapter, Habakkuk raises questions about God's justice and laments God's inaction in punishing the injustice happening. And it's interesting because Habakkuk says at the end of chapter 1, okay, I'm going to stand on the rampart now and wait for you to answer. And God does answer. But it says here, it's an interesting point, instead of engaging in debate, God gives Habakkuk a vision of the future, which includes five oracles. So the five things that are given by God to Habakkuk as the answer to, you know, how, why is there evil in Israel, and why are you going to use an eviler nation to punish Israel? The answer includes 5 points. One, God has a plan and an appointed time for judgment. It may be slow in coming as humans see things, but it will come. So that's one of the points that we made. The second, the woe oracles confront the prevalence of evil in the world and the justice those acts have earned. God is a just God, and justice says that those evil things that the Chaldeans are doing, those evil things that radical Muslim extremism are doing, those things will be punished by God. God is just. There will be punishment for it. The third point, the vision of the manifestation of God is a recognition of God's power to address these issues. Fourth point, God as a warrior will fight for his people. And fifth, the Song of Triumph says, the faithful will prevail by holding to trust and hope. And this reference to a Song of Triumph is what's covered in chapter 3. So that's the last chapter of Habakkuk. We'll cover that now. So just before the graphics at the bottom of the page, there's a reference that says, so it's covered in the section that's Habakkuk 3:19, where it says, to the chief musician with my stringed instruments. So again, this prophet is a musician, and the way that he gives his prophecies is through music. And so here we're hearing, you know, there's the reference that it's going to be done through music. I would have sung today, but I actually was singing with the choir earlier, so we're just having a reading of the section today. But let's cover chapter 3, which includes what we call Habakkuk's prayer. 3:1 says, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet. Verse 2, O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. So again, that was one of the messages of Amos, where Amos had these visions where Israel was going to be punished, and Amos cries out to God saying, Eternal God, you know, please be careful with your nation, otherwise it'll be destroyed. So one of the roles of the prophets is to intervene for God's people to God and say, you know, God, please remember mercy. And Habakkuk here says, in wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, the Holy One, from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden. Before him went pestilence, and fever followed at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills bowed. His ways are everlasting. So here we have a prayer, probably a song, where Habakkuk is praising God as a powerful leader and as, you know, the ruler of the earth. In verse 7 it says, I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land of Midian trembled. So all these are the, you know, nations around Israel that are trembling. Verse 8, O Lord, were you displeased with the rivers? Was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the seas that you rode on your horses, your chariots of salvation? Your bow was made quite ready. Oaths were sworn over your arrows, Selah. You divided the earth with rivers. The mountain saw you and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hands on high. The sun and the moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear. You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of your people, for the salvation with your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare from the foundation to neck, Selah. You thrust through with his own arrows the head of his villages. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. You walked through the sea with your horses, through the heaps of great waters. When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones. I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. So we have here a very respectful Habakkuk praying to God, saying, you know, that he realizes how God is great and terrible, especially to his enemies. And he also recognizes in verse 13, you went forth for the salvation of your people, for the salvation with your anointed. So again, a reference to Christ there, who is God's anointed. And again, a comfort. So God is a terror to his enemies, but he's a comfort to those that he's coming to save. So it's talking here, again, about the deliverance of God. And the last couple of verses, Habakkuk rejoices in the eternal. Verse 17, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the eternal. I will joy in the God of my salvation. So here we can say it's a paradox or an enigma, something you don't expect. Verse 17, though all these negative things might happen, that doesn't matter. All these negative things, there's no blossoms on the fig trees, there's no fruit on the vines, there's no olives, fields yield no food, the flocks are cut off, all of those things are bad. And verse 18, yet I will rejoice in the eternal. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet, and he will make me walk on my high hills. And once again, to the chief musician with stringed instruments. So again, the point here, similar to the point that Ernie was making in his message, that thankfulness is important, whether you're blessed with just an empty apartment with no possessions yet, or whether you have lots. The idea of gratitude is what's being expressed here, that Habakkuk asked God questions. God gave him answers. And again, the answers were not necessarily as direct as Habakkuk might have wanted, but God was saying, I've got a plan, and we're going to have to wait for it to unfold. And at the appointed time, at the time of the end, it's going to become very apparent. So wait for it. So the idea, people of God have to have faith. They have to wait on God to ultimately deliver. And that was the message of the faith chapter. All those people who did great things for God died without yet receiving the promise, but they had faith because they were able to see that the promise will come, that God will ultimately provide. There's a listing of some other points there. I'll just leave that for you to go over in your own reading. But interestingly, there are some big ideas in the book of Habakkuk. There's some questions that he asks and God answers.